talking with Richard Twiss over the telephone from Groningen to London on 17th July 1981. And let me start by asking you, what was your educational background, and what were you trained as, more or less?
I've been mathematics.
Yes.
And then I was, because of the war once, but with radar.
Oh, I see. So you were in radar during the war. And could I ask where and what kind of...
What was, kept on changing his name, started off in, called him RRE at one time. Yes. Royal Radar, Royal Earthhead, another time. RRE.
No, I know the establishment at Malvern, right?
Yes. Started off at Swanage.
Which is near Malvern?
No, that's on the sea coast.
I see.
By Bournemouth. And then when there was... He did a raid on one of the German radar installations in France. And carried off the transmitting valve and this sort of thing.
Yes.
There was a panic. Germans were signed high, so they all moved away from Swanage.
I see. And when did that happen?
Days.
When did that happen?
1941 or 2, probably 42, I think.
And what particular things did you work on in radar?
I worked on noise, the radar, tactical radio receiver.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't allowed to do it in theory. Looking at working on optimized
right.
Noise radio.
I see. And you continued on that throughout the war?
I continued on that throughout the war. And after that, I went to America to write the chapters of Private Shells in the MIT series.
Right. I see. So you have a couple chapters in there.
Yeah, I have three, I think.
I see. I'll have to check on that. Let me just pause now. Did you happen to know any of the people who later became radio astronomers?
Oh, yes. I didn't know Hamby Brownwell at that time, but I knew Martin Lyle.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Were you knowledgeable at all about extraterrestrial radio radiation? But what about the effects on receiver noise of the...
Well, there was the effects on receiver noise predominantly was, and true of the sun, did have a case interfere with radar in the field. The noise ratio one heard was so bad that you can worry about the external world.
Is that right? Well, the reason I asked...
Because they required very careful adjustments in the test time that they had adopted.
Yes. Do you mean in the field as opposed
to...
They
weren't properly aligned, but they weren't properly aligned.
Right. Well, I think it's Hay, actually, that has said at one point at one point... The low-frequency receivers became limited by the galactic background, maybe towards the end of the war, their sensitivity.
But yes, if they're properly ideally tuned up, that's quite true.
Okay, but in practice, that didn't happen very much.
Of course, in the research phase, don't bother this horse by megacycles anymore. One of the first little things.
Right.
The rise.
Yeah. Okay.
It's quite true that the same has a properly lined up, then of course, the left.
Yeah. But in the field, you're saying it wasn't of that much...
Well, Right.
So you went to America, and you worked on the MIT radar series.
Yes.
And then could I ask what you did next?
Yeah, then I stayed on. The English had some idea of keeping it. We had a British radiation lab in MIT. Also, maybe the war would start again or something. So we kept it on in being, and I was it.
I see. And how long did that last?
That lasted 49. I think it was the most where I was at.
I see. And what kind of research was that?
Well, I wrote pieces on magnetron. I was interested in hazards.
Right.
And also high energy. I was saying about the San Livingston location, the fans for the Trevorstown.
I see. And then you must have come back to Manchester about that time.
No, I came back to England. I was still attached to something. They worked for the Admiralty.
I see.
But I knew Vivian Bowes
And how do you spell his last name? Yes. Oh, yes.
Where Henry Brown was
right.
One of the partners, and there were several others, about four or five of them. And then they gradually broke up, rock on more horns in Canada. And Robert went to Manchester, they stopped.
Right.
And I was introduced, I met him before, I think, but he got to America early on to work on the Tennessee called United Nations.
I see.
So they've been in America all war,
Yes.
And the problem was interesting one of this time was called the viewpoint source. You think that they
right.
Get here, and it was very hot on going on where they new objects and were all the very close they would come.
Right.
The general view was that there was probably a population of invisible optically visible objects.
Right.
And then it's sort of various things associated with the galaxy. Nobody really thinks that it's actually being called.
Right.
And
this is 1949 now you're talking.
49, this date was the best, 50, 51.
Well, when you first became introduced to this, it was 49.
It was 49.
Yeah.
49, 50. I think it's not as promising as the latest.
The first experiments, according to Hanbury's book, were 1950.
Yes, that's it. But I only got back, I know, in September 49, so it wouldn't have been much later.
Right.
And we very started early in because people didn't, he had an idea, this question, of being able to extend the base style without having to face it.
Right.
And he wasn't sure where it worked, because of course, Cambridge did work. Still did. NIH,
not invented here. I haven't heard that
expression. Oh, well, it's difficult to find the case of that, it's called the research department.
Right.
And he couldn't be sure whether it would work or not. Of course, some of the ideas put forward really wouldn't work. It involved putting a time frame, which was a call.
Now, what was the...
Before it might be a very long base time, I thought it was... off the moon.
Oh, I see, that you could...
You could delay everything and use very narrow bandwidth, but of course this is nonsense. It would use more or less the same receiver either it's made when it's moved or when it's in space.
I see.
It's nonsense.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I've never heard of the idea before, though. This was something that Hanbury was thinking about?
Well, yes, among other people talk about it.
Right. Well, tell me about some of these other ideas that didn't quite work out. I mean... size, you didn't care about detailed structure,
no,
so you could live without the phase.
That is true, but the first measurements were done where them was, I think they were on Cygnus, I think.
Or on the sun, actually.
Oh, the first was on the sun.
Yes.
Which is half that side. First was on the sun.
And then on Cygnus or Cass, I'm not sure
and
which.
I think both Cygnus and Cass.
Yeah.
And Cygnus turned out to be either two or three objects.
Two?
Yes, turned out to be either two or three.
Oh, I mean, you couldn't distinguish, you mean?
No, the trouble was that you had to move the aerial about, and you could put it in somebody's field, maybe, if the chap was friendly.
Right.
If not, you had huge gaps in the baseline.
Right, right.
So the use of props they had, it wasn't very easy to do, because there's not much money then. It was done for compatible with either two or three.
Right.
So they did, generously, was,
right,
added a phase measurement to it to distinguish. See whether it's gone through pi or gone back to zero.
Right, right.
And one really, in fact, one could use intensive chromatic techniques as well.
Yes.
The only example of the sort of disorder and things really ever get to be used in physics for what has done it.
No, you say it's a pity because it detracted from the method.
It would have been a freak. It will now never be done because people's noise is appalling.
Right.
And the only thing strong enough, the very strong radio force, is now you've got space to get needed.
Right, right.
But it would have been rather nice to close with one star.
I'm still don't quite get to your point. The Cygnus.
It could have been resolved, but I'm not. You have to use the coherence phase, you could use it in astrometry and had a triple correlator.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's the intensity of the chromatic technique could have found, you could find different phase.
I see.
And that's all you need for this thing, was added to the time or by north.
Right, but instead Jennison resorted to the traditional
approach. Yes, he really hadn't thought that in fact you could use the same.
Yeah,
phase.
Yeah.
This was invented later, some pointed out later by
Dasgupta. Yes. I see. And, but now you've sort of skipped ahead a little bit here. You say that Bowden told you about this problem.
Yes, he introduced this problem. He talked about it while he got up to Manchester.
And then you immediately obviously became interested in the problem. Did you begin collaborating right from the beginning?
Yes, right from the beginning. And then you kind of started using radio astronomy as such.
But now, did you continue working at your old place, or?
Yes, the Admiralty was very tolerant about these things, as long as it was related, as long as one did one normal work has allowed to go on. I was often very close to the
I see. But I'm noticing now that in the 1954 paper, which was the first one that described in detail the intensity interferometer with Hanbury Brown, that your byline is the Services Electronics Research Lab.
That's the Admiralty.
That's the Admiralty Lab, I see. Okay.
The Admiralty always wanted to be more controlled as possible. I've been getting smaller and smaller. They did hold on to thousands of them. They didn't always do an average thing at all.
I see. Okay.
The SDRL did quite good thing, but not very large.
Okay. Let me take you back to your first talkings with Hanbury Brown about this and your first visits to Jodrell Bank. Can you tell me what your impressions were of the research that was going on there and so forth?
Well, all very keen, and of course there was very little money. They had this, and I'm sure that they by then had this fixed
cannabinoid
with a little groove they had to tell it about.
Right.
And they had a few wartime things left over.
Right.
And that was it.
They were doing a lot of meteor radar.
Lovell himself was pretty curious, but not pretty. You could not be sure.
Yes, right.
And the one who was interested other aspects was Robert, who didn't probably know much about it either at the time. He wasn't a father, I think.
Right, right. But,
well, it didn't matter because he always started to take the way he was trying to do it anyway.
But now, you had been working in many different physics and development research labs. It sounds like your main impression of this place was that it was getting along on very little money. And
it had a lot of enthusiasm.
Right.
And it didn't need a great deal of money because they had a lot of war surplus.
And you were operating at low frequencies where...
Oh, yes, everything was done at low frequencies. I don't think they had any high frequencies.
Yeah. No, I don't think so at that stage, right.
It was in the old Cessna 4 equipment.
Let me go back to the point you mentioned about ideas that turned out not to be correct, as possible ways to get around the Michelson interferometer. Can you possibly think of any others? Ideas that don't work out are as interesting in the history.
They are, and there are a large number of them, but most of them are ludicrous. That's the one I can think of, actually, was trying to get use a very narrow band and allow put in the fixed time delay between the two pickups. You record one thing on tape, see?
Yes.
And then when the earth moves the wrong way, you record more on tape, try to correlate to see that it was there.
From the fact that the earth had moved?
Yes.
Ah, yes.
Of course, it doesn't work.
Right.
So, it wasn't obvious it didn't work, because that's another thing to say.
Yeah. Right. So there were many different approaches that were considered for a while, at least.
For a while, yes.
Yeah.
And one was always thinking at that time of of recording stuff on tape.
Right.
But then it would have been equivalent to cassette.
When was that first done, in fact?
It was done by the Americans, I think.
Well, the VLBI, you mean,
in
the 60s. But was that the very first time
that
any kind of tape recording was done?
I would have thought.
Because the idea is mentioned at the end of your 54 paper.
It is.
Let's see, what does it say here? It should be possible to eliminate the transmission link altogether and to record the low frequency outputs of the two receivers on, say, magnetic tape.
Yes. It's not implemented.
So you had it right there.
It's an obvious idea, but of course it's something the tape equipment at that time was very expensive, far more expensive than those experiments.
Right. And also the timing, I suspect, was much trickier to do than...
Well, it wouldn't have been too bad if you were fixing it as you could on strong sources for a few hundred cycles bandwidth.
Yeah.
That would have been very easy, even then you would have done some minute fixing better.
Right.
That was doable.
While I'm on this page in your paper, you mentioned at the end that... about going to optical wavelengths, that a preliminary examination suggests the technique cannot be applied, and that it breaks down due to the limitations imposed by photon noise, quote-unquote. Now, were you referring to a theoretical difficulty or a practical difficulty there? And what was that?
The signal to noise is really too bad.
Just because of the quantization of the photons?
Yeah, because the photons are very fatigued.
Yeah, right. Okay. I wasn't quite sure whether you had, in principle, thought that it would break down there, but,
No, because we were always, there's no difference, but I'd always taken the practical view that this was not a really proton phenomenon.
Right. Okay, well, let me ask now, through the early 50s, you were not at Jodrell Bank working, but you obviously visited quite a bit, but... Were you helping out with the observations now and then?
No, not at all. Not with the radio probably at all.
Did you help out with the Sirius observations that came along in late 55, early 50?
Yes, I did.
On the optical side.
Then I was concerned to know how to do it, because the really help that I gave actually was to insist that the detectors had the square law.
Mm-hmm.
The problem at that time said it was just the same thing.
Yes.
I used to go over what the experimental program was, but I didn't do any observing before.
In the radio?
Yes.
Right. But you said you did help out with the optical observations.
So the optical, yes, because no one had to design the, what the noise was, how much the band was, how long that was
But you still stayed unofficially at the Admiralty?
Yes. I was by then... I think I was going to go to Australia on the first trip to the SRO.
Mm-hmm.
To be the rate about it.
Right, but was that to work with that radio physics or another part of CSIRO?
That was radio physics.
Yes, okay. Well, we'll come to that shortly. Can you tell me what your recollections are of those observations of Sirius?
Yes, my recollections were... appalling difficulty of doing visual astronomy in Manchester.
Right.
I was, you could see the thing looking sort of a dirty yellow. very often because there was, of course, associated with noise at all. And the integrating technique one had was the motor, integrating the motor. You definitely had fire from it. And it adds valuable, as the brilliant was going increasing, the speed picking up.
Yes.
It would add on extra positive signals. The brilliant went the other one, it took extra negative off. So there's no testing thing.
Right.
It come off as it's gone on.
I see.
But they had, like, one night when I watched there, when the signal noise was good, and it was but.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Hanbury mentioned that there were 18 hours of good observations for the whole winter.
Yes. He was there, he says, and when I was up on the train, we didn't even get out. I wasn't living.
Yeah, yeah. But I gather then that you were always quite confident that this would work once you got the technical problems of the...
Yes, I was quite confident it worked. There were slight worries about what the atmosphere might be able to do decolonizing. But I satisfied myself you could only decolonize small, very large objects.
Yeah, but you had worked that out.
Well, yes, the first part, but not very rigorously. You would have to put in the atmospheric sensor much. We would have randomized atmospheric sensor and see whether you could do it or not.
I see.
I think you might be able to, if the source was big enough.
Right. But it must have been rather satisfying when the final result you got was a quite reasonable result for the diameter of Sirius.
It was, but I had to do all the very efficient and all the stuff.
Right. Now, also at this time, of course, in the pages of Nature largely, this argument was raging back and forth about did this thing violate fundamental physics, and other people were doing experiments. I'd be interested in your comments on what it was that really bothered people and what their basic misconception was.
Basic misconception was they had this sort of argument called spins. Protons have no connection one to the other.
Completely stochastic.
Yes, they effectively really think that they both of the systems.
Right.
Nobody who was high level mind never had any problem with it at all.
Well, I was just going to bring up Purcell's name because from looking at the literature, it seems to me that he more or less settled this in terms of the arguments in the literature. Would you agree with that?
Yes, it depends on
your qualitative point. Oh, I see. You think that was the main reason?
Yes, I think it was. Of course, he put it in the language of
boson statistics. Right. And no one else had done that in print anyway before.
No.
Yeah. But
Right.
But had you developed that sort of idea before?
No, I knew it could be done, but I didn't have to have it. Because I'd always wanted to stress that this thing is still used as a sort of attitude of need of law. It's an experiment either illustrating part of the nation's life or bravery, life or not so.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always tried to suggest that that's the same interference phenomenon of
Right. Well, I gather from Hanbury's book that nevertheless you felt like you had to answer all these various criticisms either in public or in private.
You certainly had to answer. You don't want to get any money to anybody do something further.
Right.
You have to clear it up.
Right, and that took quite a bit of effort since they were coming in from many different directions.
Yes, there were lots of tips.
Right.
And of course, there were these people who done experiments on testing the time correlation.
Yes.
They were looking always for a linear effect. As say, is there a probability in one proton in 100 correlation?
Yeah.
Well, this is of course earlier, exactly the same.
Right, and you showed rather easily that they just didn't have the sensitivity to.
Well, it was taking them continuous air.
Right, right. Longer than the age of the universe in one case. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, someone tried to describe how it's better than sitting in power.
But, now, what was your motivation to go to radio physics in Sydney?
Oh, well, I'd had enough of the atmosphere. I mean, the house couldn't take with.